Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sitting here on this like 79 degree day in March, which has been long awaited for. A long time coming, is probably better said. And I'm sort of trying to contemplate this kind of urge to make an episode, to make it about Flat Earth. Because there's just still something on a macro scale for me that's unsettling about where everything is right now, where it's been as a theory. I'm very disappointed in the scientific community that is attempting to debunk it. I mean, I'm very disappointed. I think that acts of courage from people that have put their necks on the line to say it in public have been obviously very effective in pulling out the cockroaches of human beings that are simply repeaters. As David Icke says, they're not reporters, they're repeaters. All the fuck they do is just read what's on the teleprompter, and by the time they need to manufacture their own thought, they talk like Barack Obama with an earpiece. You know, you ever wonder why that guy stutters so much when he talks? It's because he's waiting for the next thing to be fed in his head. But you're obviously your faux frontline science people, especially the science guy who literally played a fictional fucking character on a kid's show, which is where he got his designation, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is so full of shit. My God, that guy is full of shit. But he's had so much smoke blown up his ass, and his ego is so fucking fragile that he uses the sort of the undulating hubris that is painted onto the surface of his body. He consumes it until he is just drunk in his fucking persona of what he is, right? You know, I want to make an episode where it's I think I'm just going to fold everything into one, but I'm going to call this episode The Flat Earth Dilemma. But the other episode I'm going to fold in here is sort of a role-playing exercise that says, okay, it's flat. Now what? I want to make an episode about pop science. So I'm going to put three things in here. Those are the three charters for this one episode to get it to go as long as I need it to go. And we'll see what happens here. Now, most of you have seen The Wizard of Oz, right? The story about Dorothy going to the city of Oz to meet the wizard so that she can get home. And who does she bump into on the way? She bumps into the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion. And what's the Lion want? The Lion needs courage because he's literally terrified of his own shadow. And, you know, the beautiful thing about that movie, and the reason why you should let your kids see it as soon as they possibly can, is that it instills qualities, core qualities to a human being. One, to believe that you do have the power to do things that you need to do without going to see anybody, right? Because at the end, he says, you guys have everything that you actually need to have. You just need to realize that you have it already. That was the solution to everyone's issue. A Scarecrow who was wise, but thought he needed a brain. The Tin Man that was one of the most tender-hearted people thought he needed a heart. And the Lion that eventually threw his life on the line to save Dorothy thought he needed courage to be bestowed upon him as if it was outside of him. And Dorothy, shit, man, she just needed to tap those shoes together. Too bad she didn't have a nervous tick, right? She could have just been sitting there, and tap, 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 and she would have been home. They would have been like, what the fuck? She just totally left us in this forest with monkeys flying out of some witch's asshole. I was always tortured with the story of Wizard of Oz because I'm from Kansas. And when I came to California, I always got two questions. Well, I guess you're not in Kansas anymore. The other one was, how's Dorothy? I just kept telling him, you know, we had to break it off eventually. But why mention that? The reason why I mention that is because for any of you that have had the balls to publicly say to another individual that you are contemplating the shape of the world, the shape of the universe, then you have courage. And I think it's funny that people like Neil deGrasse Tyson appear to have none. What has that guy ever uttered in his lifetime on camera, on any recorded medium, that would require one molecule, one measurable unit of courage? None that I've been able to find out. Same thing with Bill Nye, the science guy, the science actor. And why is that important? In my eye, there's a quality in a person with courage. Now, it does help when a person with courage also has the ability to deduce, to gather facts, to gather information, and try to sort out which ones are true, false, and maybes. Because there's going to be maybes in there. To apply them to whatever hypothesis that you're trying to either certify or deny. And we have to understand that there's going to be hypotheses that are probably more black and white in terms of right or wrong, and then there's going to be nebulous thought processes that will really sort of sit on the fence of reality, right? They don't really exist. It's like a lot of the mathematics that torture physics right now is that if the only proof you've got that anything exists is a mathematical formula on paper, then you have actually probably proven it's more likely to be untrue than true, because you can get math to do anything that you want. And then once you see the results, you can assert whatever you want. I have way more respect for an NBA player that says he thinks the world is flat than Neil deGrasse Tyson sitting on Joe Rogan's show, two gigantic intellectual pussies, saying, you know, patting themselves on the back with some of the worst fucking examples on planet Earth of how smart they are. No fucking courage. But you know what's funny about those two guys? They're the inverse formula. If you could take Wizard of Oz and invert it, that's Joe Rogan, his fucking stupid ass sidekick, and most of the guests he brings on to talk about this stuff. They're running around for the first two acts of the movie talking about how much brains they have, how much heart they have, and how much fucking courage they've got. And they get to the wizard and he goes, "You're a fucking idiot who is non-empathetic, who has no fucking courage. And you don't have the power to get home because you don't even know where the fuck you are." We got to kick these fuckers to this fucking curb, man. You have to. Once someone certifies that they're absolutely closed-minded, that they're a chicken shit, they can't even walk down the path of looking at the facts. I'm telling you guys, I'm 51% I think it's round because of expanding Earth. Right? No one has done anything but given me stupid fucking butthurt comments about me saying it's expanding. No one has actually dug into the science to prove to me that a disc could expand and all the continents could rip apart from a central ball. But I don't hold it against them. At least they're still doing what they're doing, right? But when someone shuts it down and chastises, right? They don't have any proof. Joe Rogan has no proof. But by God, he's got a show that says he's got proof, right? Because he's a coward. He's a big, tough MMA narrating coward. For him, there is no unknown. The idea that someone gets more subscribers and more syndication by being a coward shows you just sort of the social justice warrior fabric that can still hold up a modicum of reality. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson is sort of like a boxer under Don King. But Don King constantly finds, you know, poor middleweight guys and throws them into a heavyweight, you know, match with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he pays the guy off to not throw any punches, you know, and to take the fall in the second round and second two. There's been no intellectual power against that guy. No one's ever sat down to debate him with any brains like we bring on this show. Like most of you who comment could take the guy down with the fucking mammoth body slam. You could. But he won't debate you. He'd rather sneak around the corner like the fucking pussy he is and get on a radio show and talk about you right? Talk behind your back. Never engage you face to face, right? Never mentions the Peter projection map. Never mentions all these shitty fucking photographs. In fact, Joe Rogan talked about, you know, the pictures of Earth from space as if there's some certification, when they're the actual most damning evidence against any space agency claiming to have a picture of Earth. And fuck if I know why we don't have pictures of Earth. Supposedly have geocentric satellites, right? Hey man, 30,000 miles away from an 8,000 mile ball, you're gonna get a goddamn good shot. And geocentric's further than that. By the way, I just took a road trip yesterday. And it was between here and San Jose, California. And as soon as I got by the reservoirs outside of Gilmore, I lost cell phone reception. And I also lost GPS instantly. So for those of you who believe GPS is a grid of satellites broadcasting down to the surface of the Earth, didn't seem to work for me. And it was in, you know, not only in the reservoir area where it's a little hilly, but I was also in an area that was completely flat. My car was literally behind for probably a full minute to 2 minutes as to where the fuck I was in Google Maps. Now, there are obviously groups out there doing their very best to sort of come together and do what they can do to prove things one way or the other. Knowing the internet, I think the biggest scare about that occurring is that we know that there are people out there that infiltrate and mess with groups. And there's just fucking weird people. There is, right? I won't say what makes them weird, but we know they're out there, right? They're just not a sound mind, you know? Or they're just shit starters. But let's go into more of this. These people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, the science guy, and all the incarnations of people like that. Now, those two guys are extremely special because they have basically turned into paid shills. And they're not, I don't know. I don't know where they actually get into it, but I think that at some point you could have just a meeting with them and simply say, if you're willing to toe this fucking agenda, we'll give you a paycheck. And, you know, what the fuck Bill Nye's going to do, right? Go become a mechanical engineer somewhere with all of his honorary PhDs? The guy was done with college by 1980, right? And, you know, it's like he's absorbing all this stuff just through the ether. And, you know, Bill Nye's whole thing is, again, he's one of these sad fucking nerds that most of his address is towards children, towards news agencies, and towards any of his scholarly, you know, pontifications. It's always in a sort of passive-aggressive, look how smart I am, and look how dumb at least these other people are. I am a huge proponent of Shakespeare's beautiful phrase, you know, I think one doth protest too much, right? The more that you put off this vibe that you have all knowledge, right? It's okay if you get pissed off here and there, you know, but get pissed off about the uncertainty, the process. But to sit around, you know, patting yourself on the back, you know, Bill Nye's interviews are usually someone, some moron interviewing the guy. What do you think about people who think the world is flat? And it's all, oh gosh, gosh, I'm so glad you asked me that, because it's been 5 minutes since I patted myself on the back for how smart I am. Neil deGrasse, he's funny, man. I took virtually every science class I possibly could in all the grade schools, in middle schools and high schools and colleges that I ever went to. And then I hung out with the brainiacs that invent, you know, the programs at universities that pay for the wings on the side of the colleges. So I've been very privileged to hang out with some really, truly amazing, brilliant people who, within 30 seconds of speaking, I'm completely lost in their absolute brilliance. And I have yet to see a single dialogue with Neil deGrasse Tyson that eclipses a grade school slash maybe early middle school conversation. He never talks about anything deep, ever. It's always like, oh, well, if this is 1955, he would have graduated grade 6 with his fucking PhD credentials, right? Now, the interesting thing about my past isn't anything about my academic prowess whatsoever. There's one thing that I got to see beautifully. And it's unfortunate, but hopefully things are going to change here in America. We have to change it no matter who the fuck is president, because we have to get back to a higher standard of education. When I was growing up and becoming scientifically aware in the very late 70s, early 80s, it's really when I started digging in and got into nuclear physics and, you know, like my story I tell where I saw China syndrome and it freaked me out. So I went and, based on what the public information about nuclear reactors, I designed my own that wouldn't go critical. To this day, they could fucking adopt it and save ourselves from all this Chernobyl, Fukushima bullshit. But the thing was is that all the books that I read as a kid talked about this evolution of science. No matter what division of science you went into, there were these previous paradigms. You know, your Newton particle physics, right? Then you got into your wave physics, and then you got into quantum physics. And, you know, as devices became more and more available to peer into the bowels of the universe, cosmology itself went from a niche market to an absolute mass production market of education. And what's sad about it is that I always thought, okay, because I was at what I perceived to be sort of the last decade of quantum physics. And then, you know, string theory came around and they got fucking body slammed, right? And now we're all kind of coming back to a frequency-based universe, power-based universe, right? So now we're kind of lost. But again, I went through the 80s, an absolute fucking science junkie, a psychological junkie, reading, you know, everything I possibly could about the human mind and how it works down from the chemicals that dispose into our brains and the biorhythms that manufacture those chemicals that I knew when I became a game designer. You know, I was designing games based on how your brain works and how much dopamine you can create and how much adrenaline you can create and what's the pace of the biorhythm of the brain. And none of my other friends are just like, this is just fun, you know. And that's why I sold my games and they never finished their games, right? So when it came to science and cosmology and you know, it was, you have small particle physics, you have, you know, your cosmology, macro physics. I was waiting for the next big bump. And I thought that people like, you know, Stephen W. Hawking were going to be at the precipice of taking us to the next level of reality within physics, within science. And what happened in the 90s was actually pretty interesting, because it seemed to beautifully conclude in the early 90s. You know, black holes were completely dispelled. You had sort of this superconductor theory coming around where somehow we could get a zero resistance circuit board where it just almost ran, you know, 1-to-1 with the speed of light. But as the internet emerged, it was like someone pulled the wool over the eyes of reality, over society. Astronomy became this almost regurgitated sort of self-cannibalizing art of, well, what's on the board today? What do we have theorized that exists today? All right, well, let's do a bunch of remakes. You know, what's the last thing we talked about with quasars? Well, you know, we think they're on the edge of the universe, traveling, you know, twice the speed of light away from the center of the Big Bang. With 9/11, I think you almost had someone throw, you know, a big stone in the middle of a mosaic that was floating on the surface of this pond, and it just got all cloudy and weird, and nobody gave a shit about anything scientific. I mean, laser-guided missiles were really interesting in 91, right? But guess what we didn't have in 1990? Really. We didn't have cartoon character, child, you know, actors for children's show on fucking public television from the Northwest, like Bill Nye running around being the science guy and actually being taken serious. This fucking guy is taken serious today. You realize that? It's really tantamount to having whoever sits inside the Mickey Mouse costume at Disneyland suddenly becoming the next, you know, Isaac Newton. It's unbelievable. We didn't have Neil deGrasse Tysons. We simply didn't. At most, you know, we grew up with Richard Feynman kind of people. Geniuses that actually spoke and lectured and had to not only observe, but prove their observations. But you had to go buy their books. You had to go attend their lectures. That's the way you got to see them. And they never left the academic model of proving what the fuck they're saying. They didn't just stand in front of cameras nowadays and turn in their careers to be celebrities on, you know, television shows. It's really funny, I got hired by a buddy of mine in 1990 to draw illustrations for his book. And I'm not sure I have a scan of this illustration, but what it was is he had picked out some quotes from people, and I had to draw images of them, right? And, you know, one of them was weird, it was like a slice of surgeons. The other one was, you know, not everything that hits the fan is distributed evenly. And one of them, he said, was, you know, something about everyone likes a theory that fits in a nutshell. Something like that. And what's really funny about it is, in 1990, I hadn't done any deep dives into the Big Bang, but something didn't sit well with me about it. And so I did a walnut broken apart, and inside was a galaxy. But the fortune that came out of it, like a fortune cookie, was the Big Bang Theory. Because that's a nutshell theory, and that's the way science is boiled down. And, you know, I'm going off. This is the first segment that's really about pop science. Now, science, before we finish up and move on, if you think about it, let's just say you're not formally trained in science, but you're absolutely interested. You've always been interested. Every time a scientific program comes on, you watch it and you listen and you try to absorb it. But when you think about, well, geez, I'd love to really study this in more detail. And so maybe you explore it. You look online. You start to find some extension courses out of colleges that you can take in the, you know, a couple days a week, or maybe even take it over the internet. And you start to see the volume and volume of books associated with taking the course, and you start to see your life disappear into it. And even though you like the idea, you don't love the idea of spending your time researching this kind of stuff. And so you steer away from it, and perhaps you feel somewhat defeated. Maybe you feel like you're inferior-minded and you can't actually become an expert. Well, I'm going to make sure you understand something, and most of you will already understand this. The people that discovered real reality, okay, not mathematical reality, right? Yes, there are mathematical formulas that keep all reality together, but if you dive into some arts of obviously physics and what have you, they're just theorizing things on paper and literally subjectively saying, this is the formula for the beginning of the universe. I subjectively invented this. And by the way, if it doesn't work out, I will subjectively change it until it does work out. And if there's a not, you know, if it works out 98% of the time with what we see, what would happen, and there's 2% that's off, then I'll put a differential algorithm to account for the 2%. And it just goes on and on and on until it becomes utter fucking lunacy, right? But you have to understand that the people that put those theories together, the Isaac Newtons of the world, Aristotle, so Copernicus, they just observed reality. And they became known as the authoritarians. When you go to college, you'll learn what they have observed. Yes, there are disciplines of science that require mathematics. Isaac Newton, again, had pretty much come up with all the formulas for calculus before the age of 20, by the age of 19. That's pretty goddamn amazing. He did was you know, one of the first supposed individuals to theorize and quantify the reaction of some sort of gravitational force. Now, obviously, the British love it when their people are the only ones that actually think up things, right? We had longitude and latitude figured out thousands and thousands of years ago, but it was lost, and it wasn't rediscovered until, I believe, the mid-1800s, right? You can become extremely brilliant with just your eyes and your brain and your spirit. You can. Now, should you try to build, you know, a nuclear reactor with just that amount of knowledge and that methodology? Maybe not. Faraday. Faraday, again, I've mentioned him 100 times on this series, on this show, on this channel. The guy's in the mid-1800s. He said he essentially had magnets, wires, and wood. And he is known today as the grandfather of electricity, right? Tesla is the super uber god of electricity. Tesla's like tantamount to an angel coming down from God and saying, you know, I've got all the answers. Shut up. We've allowed the internet to utterly gag science. We've allowed shows like Cosmo to gag and stunt the growth of humanity. And I'll tell you why. There's been some great YouTube videos where we're trying to parse, those of you who have the courage to look at Flat Earth as an objective possibility, you start to realize why people scoff without doing any research at the notion that we have not observed where we are from any high altitude. We haven't. You can't trust the space agencies because they have been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to be complete liars. And you know, there's some people who say that after, you know, a thimble's worth of research, yeah, everything sucks, these people suck. And there's some of us that have been debriefed by the people who work for those places at the deepest depths of the organizations. And we've also gone out and acquired enough scientific knowledge to prove that what we're seeing is impossible, right? When you realize that's the case, you start to realize, and again, I'm plagiarizing someone else's video I recently saw, but they boiled it down to a beautiful thing, which is as long as there's a quick, again, nutshell answer, nutshell theory, something that just takes that enigma out of your life, that paradox out of your life, and it suggests an answer so that you can be a big intellectual pussy, right? You never have to use your brain. Because hell, thinking would be probably heresy in this planet right now, right? As long as you got an answer, that must be true, because boy, it feels good. It feels good not to think. I just want to lay here for a little while. You're pissed off that you don't know how to think anymore, right? You don't want to look in the mirror and find out that you've allowed yourself to become an abject moron. And so you get defensive about anyone who suggests that perhaps you let yourself go intellectually, right? So shows like Cosmo do not inspire children as much as you might think. What it's doing is it's installing limitations. Anyone who takes E equals MC squared and tells a child you can't travel the speed of light, or especially faster than the speed of light, they're stagnating the brain. They're installing limitations. Bill Nye himself said what I have said on this show, but he's patting himself on the back while I was providing a warning. There would be nothing more thrilling for those that control this world through financial manipulation and crime, those who traffic children all over the place under, you know, this pizza ordering service. Nothing would make them happier than for Bill Nye to teach you that you can't leave this planet. You're stuck here, folks. You can't go anywhere. Don't even try. Now, I think that trying to escape Earth to solve any of your problems is probably not the way to go. But as long as we're safe here, you've done a beautiful job becoming a human being, becoming balanced and tolerant, and you just happen to create a rocket that can get the hell off this ball, if it's a ball, hit, you know, visit the dome edge if it's a dome, visit the dome edge at the ice barrier, or if again there's models of Flat Earth where there's no dome, you just simply go over and there's a bunch of other continents and you can meet a bunch of other folks, like the guy that showed up at the the Japanese airport, and he had this map on him that showed a bunch of other continents, and he mentioned a location that didn't exist on planet Earth, as if he had somehow gone from the outer continent in a ship and, you know, I don't know, he landed in the Japanese airport somehow, if I got my story right, you know, and they said, well, this is really strange. Now, again, that could be a huge psyop story. And supposedly the guy vanished like in some movie. But as long as we keep installing these nutshells, we are screwing with society's ability to engage a frontier of intellectual thought. One of those shows ever ending with homework. Homework where you're supposed to take a theory that already exists and doubt it. Right? When does that ever happen? Shit, man, when do you ever go to school and get encouraged to doubt what they're teaching you to try and prove it in a laboratory, right? Now, there are some science disciplines that are much more straightforward, like chemistry, for instance. You know, atomic mass behaves a certain way under certain conditions. But that's good to know, right? Now, the other thing that you see happen is sort of this mob rules methodology. Let's say you sit in a room with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and again, he talks about having given, you know, these opportunities to people that doubt what he spouts, and then he gives these ludicrous examples where he's essentially giving himself like a level one question, something that's not a good smoking gun, something that, you know, doesn't get any intellectual back and forth, and he claims victory. Again, just like the pussy he is, I swear to God. If you've ever seen the movie Dragon Slayer, way back in, I think, 83, there's a scene in that movie where the kid and the wizard kill the dragon at the end of the movie. And the old farty king, who can barely fucking walk, gets his assistant to help him climb up on top of the dragon. And then he pulls out this sword that he can't hold up. And they put it down on the dragon, and this guy calls out, "Let it be known that the king slayed the dragon." That's what those guys are. Cowards. Liars. They do not care in the slightest about the intellectual prowess of you or your children. Their victory at the end of the day is to say, how many minds did I close? How many people did I get to buy into, you know, global warming? You know, we don't have any crimes for the corruption of a human mind, really. I mean, we kind of do and we kind of don't. There's some very obtuse or very acute ones, you know. You know, we're adults, you know, these fuckers that mess with children, you know. Yeah, we got some laws there. But it's always some sexual thing, right? Which is good. It's good we have laws there. But what about just misguiding human beings on a mass level? It's illegal to run into a movie theater or any type of theater with a bunch of people and yell fire. And it's because people have done this and it created more deaths than any impending flame that was coming their direction, because there's a stampede. And no matter how you want to design a movie theater without severely changing the way it works, the doorways are too small. You'd have to remove the whole first 10 feet of wall around a theater and have everyone run in, you know, adjacent directions to make sure no one got stampeded. But you know what? There's another theater next door and a building next door, and you can't do that. But it's okay to go in and intellectually bomb with almost like a stunning agency, right? A stunning agent, I should say, to shut down the minds of man. That's okay. In fact, that's preferred. And there's this theme that's put through Hollywood, and I just recently watched this repeated on a video, and I just want to call it out because it's a very interesting thing. I commend the people who put this in their video. There's a scene out of Men in Black, and I don't know which one it is, but the two guys are talking, and he says, you know, I think Will Smith's character saying, you know, why not just tell everyone the truth? I mean, goddamn, let's get over this. I'm right off the streets. You told me, and I was intellectually able to handle it. And the other guy says, you know, well, they're all fucking crazy people. You know, they're idiots. They're going to go crazy. You know how the people are. We can't tell them anything. And this has been a sad theme that's been stuck inside movie after movie after movie and book. And you'll even hear it seldomly repeated by man to man, right? Why, you know, if the government had UFOs and aliens, why wouldn't they tell anyone, right? But that mechanism, that line in the film, is not designed to call out any truth of the world. It's called out to put chains on your brain to maybe buy into that and subscribe to it. Even if you're not paying attention to the dialogue, it doesn't really sink in consciously, but it does subconsciously. And you say to yourself, yeah, that's right. We can't tell anybody the truth. That's probably why, you know, if the world is flat, we can't tell anybody or whatever. Or it's round, but, you know, we haven't flown high enough to get a good picture of it. You've got to recognize pop science nowadays. Pop Science has a vibration and a theme that is every single day shows like Cosmo that just propagate horseshit as fact. Big Bang is absolute horseshit. All right? If you've never listened to one of my episodes, you need to understand, if you study Joseph Campbell, the guy that's really credited with the arc of Star Wars, even though Seven Samurai had made a movie just like it beforehand, he said that the first stories of man believing in God and having a story of God was asleep and he awoke. And when he awoke, he exploded. And when he exploded, he was the particles that flew all over the universe. And at that point, the story is a fork in the road where the planets and the stars and life were all from this original being that woke up and exploded. And the second story is that the planets and the stars were already here, and it's only the life, the plants, the animals, insects, and humans that landed, fully formed, of course. So the only thing that they did was they took this mythos. Stephen Hawking took this mythos and invented this theory to put the whole universe inside of a nutshell. And, think about it. Think about your average person in the world with no scientific background reading that and whatever it was, 6970, and saying, "Did you hear, honey? What? They figured out how the universe was born. And guess what? I read it and I understood it. And now I'm a fucking genius because now I can tell everyone else at the Bridge Club how the world and / universe was created." That's great. So they packaged up an emotion, they packaged up a self-evaluating accolade of brilliance inside of a bullshit theory and pushed it around. And now it keeps getting handed down and handed down. Like I said in the last couple episodes, they usurp the Olympics to push more global warming horseshit. And it never pushes science, it pushes this hysteria. While Brazil sells off all their fucking rainforests to China to be cut down. The only machine on planet Earth that converts fucking, CO2 into oxygen. And they're chopping it down to make more CO2. So as a parent, you either have to add some intellectual sauce and filtering to your kid's life if they're addicted to watching those shows. Or you got to do it to yourself. If you've been addicted forever, you need to go inside that archive of your mind, right? That pantry I keep telling you about, right? Pantries usually have three sides. There's a door to get in. You got left shelf, right shelf, and a back shelf, right? Well, one of your left and rights is going to be true and false. The back shelf in the middle is going to be your maybe pile. But you probably will need a folding table in the center of the room to hold your other maybes that don't fit on the shelf, because you should probably have more uncertainty in life for a while, at least, until you've had a chance to engage outside of this indoctrination. And you might loop back, just to finish up the pop science thing, you might loop back and just say, "Well, you're really rough on, Joe Rogan, of all people, right? I like that guy. I think he's funny as hell. And at times when he was more open-minded before he tried to syndicate his show, he certainly had a more, open mind towards all things. He hasn't learned what George Norrie has understood, which is the more closed-minded you become, you lose your followers. You don't gain them, right? But you might say, "Well, you're not being very tolerant of closed-minded people." Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. If you're going to put anything in stone, any rigid structure in your brain, in your intellectual machine, which I'm not sure you should, right? If you take a Swiss watch and you take any one of the gears in a Swiss watch, and you make it so it doesn't move anymore, you've broken the watch. It no longer tells time. And that's your brain. So you might actually have a point where the gears turn around, it looks like Mickey Mouse's head for some minute, for some split second. Oh my God, I think this thing is actually some celestial Disney device. And then it keeps turning around and you go, "Oh my God, it looks like this movie logo I saw once," We all go through phases in our life where we say, "I believe it might be this way, and I believed it was this way." But usually, one qualifies everything they're thinking. Like I'm telling you right now, there are things that I think are extremely observable about the world that make it round for me. And it's not all the curvature stuff, which seems, lasers are seeming to prove that it's, if it's curved, man, it's much bigger than we ever thought it was, right? So I can't, you know, that keeps my mind open. When the moon is off to the right of a rocket launch, but in real life it was on the other side of the world, 237,000 miles away, according to heliocentric science. Hey, man, the burden isn't on me to tell you why the fucking moon's in the shot. It's up to these self-certified geniuses with all these, you know, bullshit honorary doctorates. The institutions that are supposed to educate you. You know, in certain sciences, you must become rigidly educated in terms of opening up a human body and doing surgery to the very best of your ability to read every single paper on the type of procedures that you're doing. Sure, you must know what these organs do, and when you mess with one organ, it changes another organ, and when blood's going this way or that way, you have to know. Otherwise, the patient dies. Thankfully, that's a little more black and white. You might actually have more fun learning how to do surgery on a brain than you will trying to figure out how the universe started. But we're unwilling to take baby steps anymore, I swear to God. Right? Why would any scientist ever get, well, one, get their thesis subject matter approved by Cambridge University to say, I'm going to find out how the universe started before you've even figured out the last 10 minutes of what the universe is doing. The last 10 microseconds of what the universe is doing. You know, I don't really imply that there should be rules about what you can research and not research. But perhaps the thesis theme that's handed off to the committee that's going to review it and give you a degree, a fucking PhD for it, perhaps it should be more open-minded. I'm going to suggest some theories. And not just one, because one is a pigeonhole, right? One is a closed-minded end result, unless all I'm doing is discovering unknowns. But to then certify it as the truth, to hand out to the world, that's what Cambridge University did. They handed it out to the world and said, this is how the universe started. Wow. Unbelievable, right? So that's the subject one, pop science. Keep your mind open. Pay attention to how institutions self-certify themselves, right? Now they will tell you that they are the preeminent authority on various subject matters. You know, let's go back to being a doctor for just one sentence here, or a few. If you're a surgeon, you automatically think you must cut the epidermis to get inside the body to alter the organs inside the body to hopefully fix a condition that is either threatening or terminal to the patient, right? Well, if that guy had watched a little more Star Trek, perhaps there would be this new form of science that says we are going to try and fix organs without cutting the epidermis using various laser technologies, maybe even, you know, gravity-based utensils where you can disturb the ethereal waves inside the human body and you can actually structurally reconstruct two arteries together. Using computers that say, we scanned it with one device to find out the geometry and the tear and the hemorrhaging. And then we have devices that modulate gravity, pushing them together. Maybe even reintroducing the nuclear bonds between two arteries such that they stick to each other like paste. And there's no stitching whatsoever. And you got some art, you know, got some plaque in the valve storage inside your heart. Well, we're going to modulate them with sound or some ethereal disturbing device using, you know, sacred geometry of electricity to free up the plaque, or destroy the plaque, perhaps even turn it into like fusion, turn it into blood, turn it into something very, you know, inert, very small so that it just passes through the blood without creating an aneurysm or some clot, right? Can you imagine someone that takes a belly of shrapnel in some war? And you're actually able to modulate all the pieces of metal, you know, up to the edge of the epidermis on the inside. You fix all the organs with all the technology I just told you. And then you just have to open up a little bit of the epidermis and pull all that metal out, all in one little pouch. Or you get really smart and turn the metal into blood or fluid, saline, sodium, whatever. You remodulate what it is. I think it would get pretty hot in the body trying to introduce that sort of reconfiguration. But hey, we're not even trying, are we? Who even thinks about this kind of stuff besides science fiction writers? So let's go down this path of, because, you know, that's 45 minutes or whatever of a foundation of sort of why I think the dilemma exists underneath flat earth. We're intellectually divided on how to approach such an interesting lack of observation in our universe, right? Now, I mentioned the following concept a couple times, but I didn't really dedicate a solid stream of consciousness to this question. And that's what I want to do right now, because I think it'll have some value. Let's just say that these flat earth communities continue for the next 5 years. And they go from these sort of hodgepodge groups of well-intending human beings with really kind of sloppy experiments. You know, they're trying. And over the next 2 to 3 years, they really tighten down their experiments. They get to the point where the plus or minus for or against the results of their experiments are reduced to fractions of a percent. Let's say they're able to convince some scientific non-believers to donate their empirical knowledge of the universe. We develop and certify and cleanse mathematics that actually apply to determining whether or not the world is curved or not, or whatever you're trying to figure out. Again, I'm going to caution people against using gravity of all things to prove it's flat or round. You know, until you get behind ethereal gravity, you're not going to have any grasp of what gravity is, in my opinion. And I'm stealing that from Faraday and Tesla. Okay? But somehow, one of two things occurs. We perhaps go in steps, right? Let's say in 3 years, we have 50 to 100 curvature tests all over the world on salt flats, on iced over lakes that are hundreds of miles long, and we prove that the curvature that we are told is not true. Okay? Maybe someone finds a little bit of curvature, but it's like, damn, this thing is massive if it is, right? Maybe, like I said in the previous episode, we figure out that it's not a flat disc, it's a disc with a wave in it, right? And that water does, through gravity, shape itself to the surface of this really large disc. Okay, so after you have that really certified, let's just say. And again, there's a lot of claims that this has already occurred. But again, it's being either disinfoed by a bunch of cat videos on YouTube, or we're unable to believe, and you know, we want to, the people in the videos as being honest to goodness people. But let's just say, again, they develop an experiment. Somehow you can do it on this patio I'm sitting on right now. Okay, so we have one piece of empirical evidence that everyone can repeat. You still have your Bill Nyes and your Neil deGrasse Tysons that are trying to hang on to their paychecks. And they're not going to come on board. All right. But now, due to that scientific experiment, whatever it is, we gain a huge mass of people that are essentially saying, we are going to go in the hundreds, if not the thousands, to Antarctica. There's this one coastal line where we can park a vessel. It's got a smooth entry point. It doesn't have the big giant cliff of ice. We can park, and going up to the right and straight back and through this and through that, using satellite photos and all this other stuff, we think we have a clear path to dig towards the center of Antarctica. And either there's going to be a base there, like they say there is, with a couple different poles, an honorary pole and a real pole for the South Pole. And then we continue going enough that we realize that we're starting to come down the other side and we can see water on the other side. Or, as it was theorized in what some woman in 1963 supposedly took a snowmobile to the edge, took pictures, left the camera, and the camera's photographs were lost. If, let's say, her story is actually true and not more disinfo, we go and either we find two things. We find a firmament wall, which I don't know how, I mean, you would think that snow itself would blow up against it like a drift. I mean, it has to, right? It has to be like that if there's a wall. And you would think that, you know, for several thousand feet, that this thing would be sort of frosted like a beer mug, you know? So you should be able to see the wall way before you actually get to it, if it actually exists. But aren't there other theories about what's at the edge? What if one of the most interesting things is that there isn't actually a barrier, and it's more like that Japanese map where there's a bunch of continents out there in the ocean, and you come down off the other side, and there's ocean, and you think, holy shit, this thing's an island, and it really is heliocentric. I've proven it to myself, it's heliocentric. But how would you prove that it's the other side of the island versus the other side of the disc? You'd have to sail down the side of whatever coast you found, right? And you're probably not going to be able to carry a ship clear across the barrier. So you're going to be sitting there with snowmobiles and no real methodology of crossing the water on the other side. But what you could do is cross to the other side and have someone, let's say you start from Sydney, Australia, and you go down towards this point that's more south of Australia, and you get to the edge, and somehow, I don't know what kind of equipment you have to have, but obviously you can get it because we have supposedly a base down there. If it's heliocentric, you have someone come from the other side of the world, from South America, and they're coming towards the edge. And so if you're really on Earth, in a heliocentric ball, you go to the other side, and your Latin friends meet you on the other side. Boom, it's a round ball. But let's just say, through some satellite radio technology, and who knows if that shit works down there, you get to the other side where you're supposed to be, and your Latin friends have met the coast on their end, and they can't see you, and you can't see them. In fact, the signal sucks. You can barely talk to them, even though technically on a heliocentric ball, you'd be very close to each other, right? Then you've revealed that this ice barrier is merely encapsulating a certain unit of ocean, and that these stars painted on the inside of a dome go way out further than you ever imagined. Who knows where the edge is, right? And your only other option at that point is to find some way to build a vessel, perhaps a plane. And you fly over that barrier. They say it's too cold to fly over, which is complete horseshit, right? When you fly at a G5 at 45,000 feet, how much colder can it get, people? Right? So you fly over and you keep flying, and maybe it's a suicide mission because you're not going to have enough fuel to turn around. Or maybe you make a deal with yourself where we have this much fuel. We're going to fly out there and we're going to turn around as soon as we get to near the halfway point of our gas tank. Or if a government participates in helping out, they bring a refueling cargo jet and they give you some more gasoline, and they turn back. Sounds like a lot of work, doesn't it? But now let's just say this all happens, and we don't have necessarily a means to explore, but there's two different scenarios here of proving that it's flat, right? One that requires infinite exploration, and one that says, wow, you got to deal with finiteness. You find the dome wall. And somehow, you know, stars make sense all of a sudden. You can see them attached to the firmament wall. There are these orbs that keep falling out of space right now. And you can not only see those orbs, but you can see holes where orbs have fallen out, right? Sounds a little far-fetched, doesn't it? Wouldn't an orb close to the surface of the Earth, who's glowing phosphorus hot, perhaps electrified on its surface of its ball, wouldn't that be frying the snow right underneath it? I mean, where does it stop? Is there a nice barrier that's 100 feet up, 200 feet up, a mile up? If you start approaching a firmament wall, unless the stars are inside of a layer that's laminated and behind another barrier, stars are going to stop before you get to the bottom of the line of sight, wouldn't they? All right, so you find out it's a wall. Whatever configuration it is, you find out it's a wall. Well, you could scour the edge for a door, like Truman did, right? If it was solid, you could perhaps pound on it, knock on it. What I think would occur if that was the case is you would have a gigantic exodus from the continents. Whatever path was used to get to the firmament wall, you would have a pilgrimage of structures going towards that moment, that Plymouth Rock of the wall, right? They would set up a camp. They would set up fire. They would warm everything up. You could probably be inside for most of the journey because there would be so many structures over the next 100 years built towards the dome wall. And that's if our captors are okay with us discovering that we're inside of the dish with the firmament dome over it. Perhaps they would push the reset button. Remember the old fable, 40 days and 40 nights of rain? Perhaps that happens. This floods the shit out of the world, resetting everything back. One dude and his best friends and his old lady and a bunch of pairs of creatures, they get to survive. Everyone else dies. That's interesting, isn't it? Talk about a reason to be chaotically fearful of flat earth people. What if finding out it's a dome signals a reset in the petri dish? Maybe that's what happened. You know, I've done minimal research on Atlantis because every time I go into Atlantis research, two things happen. One, 99% of all the evidence of Atlantis is all based on channeling people's spirits. The second thing is, even when you listen to all the claims of the evidence from channeled spirits, the actual byproduct and collection of evidence is so minimal and so unimaginative. It's like a bad guest on, you know, Coast to Coast AM, who's unable to entertain the audience with their theories of traveling to other planets and what have you, right? Or meeting aliens or something. But what's interesting about the theory of Atlantis is that it's almost like the laboratory that set up the dome. A city full of amazing technology. Of course, if you believe in the recent introduction of Lemurians are the Atlantis and the Pacific Ocean, so it's kind of like these two laboratories, and they're, you know, more recently in the last 20 years, you know, I've heard this, probably in the last 15 years, I've heard these theories of that they were the splicers of mankind, you know, angels or Anunnaki that made love to pygmy people and created humanity. But I think that the fragility of man would dictate that man wouldn't have made it even that far, unless they're having sex with some sort of hominid, right? Maybe they were freaky, you know? But let's just say you wake up, and any day of the year, there's a new website out there that's created after you find the wall, and it's called, you know, thefirmamenttruth.com or something, right? And it's just a great scientific organization that amasses all that is learned about the firmament wall, because we're now able to talk to it. There's no reset going on. We now know the circumference of the dome itself. We just know everything. We know why rainbows are shaped like a firmament. And now all these theories about the moon's placement, the sun's placement, are explained. Still can't explain why there's a shadow on the moon during a lunar eclipse. This black sun theory doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But what then? Does your landlord not call you for rent? Are bills not due? Do you have no more interest in buying items, raising children? I mean, some people will lose their mind for sure. You'll get your Dennis Hoppers that'll go down there and you know, paint their faces and create some new indigenous bizarre race that's the firmament race, right? See Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now if you have a problem with that reference. I'm sure authoritarians will step up to the plate, right? Someone who's a very heavy personality on YouTube trying to promote Flat Earth will go down there and try to become a messiah for sure, right? Space agencies will literally disappear. Your science guys and your Neil deGrasse Tysons will be walking scarlet letters of heresy. It will only be their PR blitz to apologize that will determine whether or not they have a future or not. It's an interesting prospect, right? We don't hear many theories about, well, what if it is flat? What if we prove it? Then what? You know, biblical people will try to assert that there's ocean above. That you're staring at the actual copyright, you know, made in heaven serial number from God. Others will theorize, well, maybe this is a natural formation. That even though it looks like it's man-made, it's really just sort of a bubble inside of a glass of Coke. And because time is moving way faster for us than the lifespan of this bubble, and the bubble's tension is so fucking strong compared to our feeble, you know, exertion of force against it, that maybe we're just sitting inside some bubble. And all the stars are merely the other bubbles shining through. But let's say the other theory happens. We go to the other side of the disk. There's another ocean over there, and it's cold as hell right on the other side. Don't get that wrong, right? And there's, we go get that Japanese map that talks about all the continents that are outside there. And there's about, there's some others as well, and from different religions, of course. But if you start to triangulate the distance to the next continent out from the disk, from any of those maps, you're going to need a pretty loaded up vessel. Some big ass planes, right? And then when you get there, what's going to happen? You're going to have is there going to be a airstrip for you to land? Maybe. Are there little gray alien races on the other side? Are there reptilian races on the other side? Are there other humans on the other side? If the guy from Japan was any indication, and again, I can't remember if he was Caucasian landing in Japan, that would be more interesting. Sort of some Anunnaki, skinny, weird guy, or a guy in a black trench coat with a tiny head who's 8 feet tall. That'd be more interesting. I think he was just a normal little citizen. But then we'd start reaching out to our brothers and sisters on the other side. And it'd be a whole new world. You know, on their side, they don't come south. Well, they don't come inside the circle because it's too difficult for them. And so they may have, I mean, imagine what their maps look like. Okay, we live on this weird disc, this ring with a center that's unknown. And every time we go to the center, we think it's a gigantic island, right? I mean, you see how mathematically it can be ancestrally round for them, and they have a big strip around there, but they wouldn't have a North Pole altogether like we do. So what would they live in, a ring world, right? It was Admiral Byrd. If you're not familiar with this guy, he was an American explorer that really spent 20 years exploring Antarctica. Came back and said there's infinite resources down there. And then shortly before he died, they signed the 54 Treaty to make sure no one was allowed to go down there. And they didn't really say why. As far as I know, the treaty was put together without sort of any decree. You know, what if scientists were to say, well, we've discovered by 1954 that the Antarctica is such an integral part of the function of this planet that if man goes down there and does anything to disturb the ice, to disturb the resources down there, somehow it creates a huge imbalance and the whole world can unravel. You never hear that, right? It's just don't go down there. Don't go down there unless you're a researcher. But if you're a moon hoax person, there's an interesting overlap between this idea that there are a bunch of scientists down there, all willing to be quiet, never ever leaking anything about this flat earth model, right? Remember, we have NSA, CIA, FBI, MI6, MI5, the Israeli Mossad. We have people like, you know, Julian Assange with WikiLeaks. Wouldn't there be one person out there filtering an email through some communication that would reveal this is flat, and they would just leak that one piece of email? Unlike the moon missions, where there's new footage constantly, there's new evidence constantly about the hoax and how few people were involved with it, is pretty much a foregone conclusion with anyone with their head firmly out of your asshole. But the moon hoax, you can explain the very few people involved. That's why the lunar lander looks so fucking cheesy. Wrapping everything in foil that when unwrapped looks like a bunch of flimsy crap that you could build your house out of, right? So you wrap it in foil to make it look scientific. Hiding, obfuscating what it really was, when you basically have sort of aluminum siding that's not even sealed on the top compartment, right? It's all bent out of shape. It just looks hokey as shit. It's almost like the Apollo 13, where they've got just a bunch of junk in a room and someone says, well, that's all we got, guys. We can get a little more of that, a little more of this, but otherwise, outside of construction paper and copper foil, this is all we got. Go. Make it look good. I don't have any idea how many people were involved in Antarctic research. But one of two things would have to be true, right? A bunch of people are down there and have been down there, and either they don't know that they're not towards the North South Pole. You know, what if the ingress egress only goes from the edge to some point in the center of this, you know, you're not quite at the wall, you're not quite at the edge of the other side, and they simply say, you're at the base now, and the only thing you can do is go to this base, do a bunch of weird shit, and come back to the edge that you started from, and then you would never know that you're not participating in a flat earth research. You would think you're in heliocentric research. Now, again, looking up at the stars might be the best way to prove it one way or the other. Either they have a bunch of tail grabbers like these Bill Nye guys, right? You don't have any status until you have status, and your status is based on fake or forged credentials. And so what are you going to do? Tell on yourself and lose all that accolade, lose, you know, that huge, you know, Thanksgiving dinner table conversation about how fucking smart you are at the South Pole? I don't know a lot of people in those positions that will behave like that and have integrity. Now, the other side of the coin is that they do know they're participating in a flat earth model. And for whatever reason, the story that they're told is either true and very significant as to why they are not allowed to reveal the fact it's a dome. But they're the privileged inside folks that do, right? Or it goes further than that. Perhaps, again, let's just postulate for 1 second. Perhaps whatever race is, it's the ring idea with the ocean on the other side and continents on the other side. And whoever is on the other side, their governments are talking to us. And, be, you know, maybe they're human looking. Maybe they're humans. And they're coming from the other side and they're going, wow, what is your culture like? You know, we do this and we let pedophiles rape children and we make churches out of those organizations. You're like, really? Well, Jesus Christ, if we ever met your people would kill your people in a heartbeat because we protect our children. Oh yeah, man, you can't have those people over here. Shit, we make those pedophiles our fucking politicians. Really? Oh my God, yeah, we got to keep our two sides away from each other. Perhaps they study the biology between the two groups of people and they go, oh shit, if we catch that flu, it's going to kill everyone on the inside. And if you catch our cold, it's going to kill everyone on your inside. And we don't want to be responsible for that, so let's just kind of quarantine our communication in some Andromeda strain building, you know, where they got their building and your building, and there's some sterilization compartment between the two buildings. They pass information back and forth, or they never pass an object back and forth because some people died way back when they first made contact. And so we do the close encounters, you know, keyboard communication, playing notes to each other. The guy who shows up in Japan speaks English, Japanese, excuse me. So somehow he lands from an outside continent and he's able to communicate. I think that's interesting. But the real question would be, what would you do to change your life if it was all proven to be true? Now, if there was a friendly communication with the inner or the outer continents beyond the ring, if that was the model, then you'd have a Richard Branson would haul ass out there and meet these people, bringing back footage. But again, there'd be a lot of people that get their paychecks from science organizations that would be doing everything in their power to try and keep it silent until the very last second. And then what would they do? Tell everyone they didn't know? Didn't know they were lying? And a lot of people would be able to say that under a lie detector test and pass. Probably the overwhelming 90%+ would be able to say such a thing. There's that old saying, you know, it's be careful what you ask for because you might get it. And I think what's interesting about the flat earth theory is that depending on who owns the dome, if it were to be real, you'd have to be careful, right? There's a twilight zone out there, I think, which is called Old Man in the Cave. It's a post-apocalyptic era episode where there's been a nuclear war. Virtually all the food and water in the world is contaminated, although it is possible to find food that isn't contaminated. And this little community in the Midwest has managed to survive, although they're all very, very hungry. And every time they find an allotment of food, this one guy the elder of the town goes out to this old man in the cave, and he asks the old man in the cave whether or not the food is okay to eat. And sadly, most of the time he has to come back and say, it's contaminated, don't eat it. And everyone goes, oh God, you know, everyone's super tired, malnutritioned. And out comes a group of sort of renegade soldiers in a Jeep, four of them, and they pull up with some major, I think. And he says, you know, they got guns, and supposedly this Midwestern town doesn't have any guns. That's just such a Hollywood bunch of bullshit. But they force themselves on the town, and they say, well, what's with all this food right here? And they go, it's contaminated, you can't eat it. It's all bullshit. Bullshit. You can eat this, come on. And the people, they almost do it, just from this guy suggesting that his opinion is Bond, right? And they said, well, why won't you eat it? And he said, well, the old man in the cave said it's contaminated. And he's like, well, who's this old man in the cave? And let's go meet him. Because he's an authoritative body over these four assholes that just showed up. And the guy who's kind of bossing everyone around wants to get rid of that authority because it's challenging his position. And so they go out to this place in the woods, and there's a cave with a big iron door in front of it. And they bang on it. I think they even shoot it. They throw a grenade at it, and there's no scratch on the door. And eventually, through some dialogue and some threats, they threaten this elder, and they say, you know, if you don't open the fucking door, I'm going to kill you. And he's managed to convince everyone in the village that they're sick and tired of their suffering, and they just want out. Somehow. And they want to meet this man in the woods. Or man in the cave, excuse me. And so the old guy says, he tries to plead with his people. He's like, guys, you know, hasn't he always taken care of us? Hasn't he always been true? And they kind of agree, but they're like, it's time. It's time we met this guy who's telling us whether or not we should eat or not, because what if the food is good? And they go inside the cave and they find out it's a CPU, a big computer in there. And they tear the shit out of it because this guy demonizes it and gets them all riled up in a mob mentality. And they destroy the computer. They come back in the village and they feast on all that food, and they have an amazing night drinking a bunch of alcohol that's been saved up. They eat all the food, but the old elder, he won't eat it because he believes that the computer was right. And the very next morning, everyone but the elder is either dead or dying. They got what they wanted. They got the food. They overlooked a higher intelligence that was trying to protect them. What makes you think a dome exists without intent, without a process, without some balance? It's alluring to think that we're in a Truman Show and that it is a game. You're supposed to find out you're in a dome to prove your worthiness to join perhaps the rest of society. Again, I mentioned a long time ago, what if this is a penal colony? Somehow in a previous spiritual incarnation, we were a bunch of assholes. I don't think that's the case, but who knows, right? As long as we sit inside the dome and we mind our own business, everything's fine. The reason why the world sucks and why people run the planet are assholes, and we all cower down to them, is the very flaw that put us in here in the first place, because we're unwilling to be accountable to ourselves and to each other. But what if it's just a benign scientific experiment, a sociological experiment where the captive simply don't sense the barriers, and so they don't explore? But the second that the sociological group, the sampling, knows that it's being analyzed, the experiment is therefore polluted, corrupt, and it will need to be reset. And so finding the barrier is the end of man. Not the end of all men, but the end of the intellectual accomplishments to date. Now, that's a bit of a flawed theory, because it would seem that the first time a human being finds the barrier, that second scenario would invoke automatically. Uh-oh, one of them found the barrier. Now, if it's an explorer, like these guys from, you know, the Nordic Alps that go and climb, you know, fucking Mount Everest in a pair of shorts and a sled, and they barely bring enough food to survive, and they get up there and come back down in 2 seconds while all of us Americans go up there and die. Hey, one guy goes up, touches the barrier, and they, you know, the door opens up, he's able to leave, like the chick in the snowmobile story, right? And they think, whatever, we'll destroy the evidence. So he gets to leave, and whatever, maybe gets put in another dome, who fucking knows, right? But there's bases down there, there's photographs. So if the second scenario has any reality, well, it probably would have already been a big reset, and so, unless somehow, right? There's some negotiation with the dome owners to say, all right, make sure no one else comes down here. Okay, we have ways of doing that. We'll sign a treaty, and we'll get everyone who doesn't know to just sign it, because they just don't know, and they want to be involved with perhaps some financial incentives to help their starving countries. But all the intellectual countries, well, is it okay if we, you know, we introduce new leaders, and when they're taken behind closed doors, we tell them about this, or we don't if we don't have to, and okay, we'll see how it goes. But if you fuck it up, man, you're reset. They go, okay, well, we're going to have a whole armada of, you know, ships, and we're going to use satellites to figure out who's coming down, who's not authorized to be here, and we will sink their ships, make them Antarctic terrorists, et cetera, et cetera. If Colonel Byrd, or sorry, Admiral Byrd, I always call him the wrong thing, but if Admiral Byrd truly found some sort of firmament, right, then we've been down there, we've had it discovered for over, what, 70 years? Wasn't he down there in the 30s, for Christ's sake? So Christ, we're almost at 100 years of knowing it's there. If that's the case. I left out the one theory that was supposedly, you know, the wingman of Admiral Byrd said that they would fly ships over the barrier, and it was some interdimensional thing, and the ships just, I mean, the aircraft just totally disappeared on the other side. But they were able to fly around the other side, which was a lush green world, and they're able to come back and land. Obviously, this guy's supposedly giving a story. But where did that story come from? It was a video of a husband-wife team that has a conspiracy channel on YouTube. All power to them. And someone calls in and claims this. And what can they do but listen, like George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM? That's a whole nother thing. At that point, there's so little substance to the actual evidence that you have to merely kind of shrug your shoulders and go, okay, well, if that's the case, then what are the stars made out of? If the barrier is an interdimensional reef, you know, between two realms, then how do you see anything in the other realm? How does an interdimensional light shine through this membrane? This is the dilemma that I'm finding in all this stuff that's being presented online, because all the videos I see online are all about the experiments and really just fighting between curvature, non-curvature, round, flat, that sort of thing. Although I think round, I shouldn't say round. The disc is round, for God's sakes. It's globe or disc, right? But if we don't move the conversation to the next possible hypothesis of where the fuck we are and what we would do as a result of what we find, then we will be at an intellectual zero point the second we discover it's one way or the other. And then what? You know, what if aliens were to land in Great Rome, you know, zero AD? And no one has had a chance to study science of any kind, because it's coveted in the universities, right? The Egyptian university, the 40-year schooling of learning universe, right? That's where that comes from. No one's postulated beings from outer space. And so utter and complete chaos would ensue, because everyone's at a zero point of knowledge in reference to what they're seeing. We don't want to be those chumps if we were to ever find out or prove that the Earth is in a completely different realm than we thought. We have to start writing Star Trek episodes in our minds about this, so we can experiment with what would we do if it was this, what would we do if it's that. You know, Faraday didn't, as far as I know about his research, he didn't theorize ether and then go out and look for it like the dinosaur bones, right? You know, dinosaurs are theorized, and they found a fucking tooth. And then they constructed an entire dinosaur head, skull, and body around this tooth. And wouldn't you, and you know, it's all fake. They even admit it's fake. You find a tooth and you build a whole body. What if you found my human tooth and you'd never seen a human, and you design a human around my tooth? And then, oh, lo and behold, 100 years later, when you say you've dug up bones, oh, it all matches the theoretical bullshitting you've been doing for 80 years. They weren't willing to just say, we found a tooth that looks like it's really, really old. Could belong to a shark, could belong to some, you know, whatever the fuck, saber tooth, rattler snake, you know, who knows? Nope. You got to have answers for everything. Otherwise, you can't publish your papers, right? You have to have certainty. You can't have unknowns. As if there is no value to society to prove an unknown, or to at least suggest that there's overwhelming an overwhelming inability to prove something, because the science methodology that we use today is unable to sift through the data with any level of accuracy or dimension. What we're doing online is necessary, but we have to acknowledge it's really child's play so far. It's very valuable child's play. I commend those who are dedicating their life to it, buying plane tickets and traveling and sacrificing other opportunities in life to enjoy life. You know, you go from being a believer in all things handed down by quote-unquote science, and you turn yourself into a lunatic for a little while, right? You know, some of you now know what it's like to be under house arrest for what you believe, or what you believe you've observed. And just look at the tribalism on Joe Rogan's show. They're uncertain as much as we are. They really are. It's all a facade. The confidence that is exuded from these minds is merely a facade to protect an id, an ego, and, most importantly, their outward persona to humanity. Can you imagine growing up your whole life and you're in your early 60s, late 50s, and you have been revered among men as being an authoritative figure on science, and then in one fell swoop, there's a laser test. There's a rocket that goes up in the sky, and you see a moon off to the right, and that experiment needs to be done again. But they need to do it on the anniversary date of the other experiment to see if it shows up on the right, or whatever, right? You can't just do one experiment and say you've got it. You got to do a bunch. It's just like these videos where people are doing these amazing repetitions where the guys, there's one dude that does a bunch of these videos. I know you guys have seen this stuff where he'll throw objects around his room, and he'll have like a buddy sitting on a sofa, and it'll be like, this is the way you load a DVD into your DVD player. And he throws his DVD over his shoulder, and he's figured out the geometry and the trajectory to throw it in a way that it bounces off everything, lands right in the goddamn DVD player, and loads. And he'll do all kinds of things. Throw a milk carton across the room, and it goes right into the refrigerator door, and the door shuts. He does hundreds of these things. It's just phenomenal how much time this guy has on his hand. But you realize he's done hundreds of takes to get the one that works. Any of you have ever tried to shoot a basketball clear across the court and you get a total air whoosh through the net, you know that was just your fortunate throw that made it work. So we can't be so short-sighted with just one or two experiments, right? We got to go all the way. And again, it's happening. There's all kinds of people studying atmosphere. Brian Mullen's experience studying atmosphere. Other folks studying laser tests. Other folks who are pilots and folks that work on naval ships that say we can't hit what we can't see, and we don't have the Coriolis effect, calibration to our shot. You know, I've talked to snipers that have said, oh, no, there's definitely Coriolis effect. And when I have them explain it, all they're actually doing is compensating for the gravity of the falling of the bullet. But they think they're actually doing Coriolis effect changes. And the funny thing is they're not shooting a bullet far enough to have any Coriolis effect. A little bit different on a naval ship that can shoot an object 60 miles away or 100 miles away. You know, we got to figure out why all the gyroscopes in the world are managed by a company it's just one company that makes all the gyroscopes that go in every single plane. Even those multiple companies that buy and resell it and put the brands on it, they're all made in one place. You know, according to one of the pilots that went and researched this, he mapped all the corporations together, and they all funnel into this one corporation, which is managed by NASA and JPL. Well, that's given that that's a smoking gun for the shape of the Earth, it'd probably be important that the illusion continues, right? People have researched the inner mechanics of it, say it's all mechanical. It's not doing what it should be doing if it was a free-floating, you know, gyroscope. Let's advance the conversation. I haven't personally experienced any of the evidence that is suggesting that it's a disc. I haven't personally experienced any of that. I definitely look at the science from the space agencies that can say they're lying, but that doesn't mean the other one's true. Some of you are very certain that you have seen enough, but ask yourself. I mean, in fact, I will say there's one listener out there. He's contacted me and said, look, I'm willing to spend thousands of dollars to personally engage these experiments, and he is willing to buy plane tickets to fly anywhere in the world to do this stuff, and that's the kind of guy that's going to figure this shit out. And he is certain it's flat, but I don't think he's been able to do the experiments that certifies his belief system. But that kind of guy is the exact kind of person we need. We need millions of those people. One crazy millionaire, one crazy billionaire, right? And I don't know where they are. Honestly, I don't know where, you know, you got an MBA guy that believes it's flat and he probably has enough money to conduct some experiments, but he also has a day job. If I were that guy, I'd find someone I trust, get a really good plan together. Probably wouldn't go for the rim, but I would definitely pay a couple million bucks to see. I mean, they'll pay a couple million dollars for a fucking car, for God's sakes. Why not take that money and put it into some folks that are very scientific, that can prove it one way or the other? When I was in the internet Silicon Valley area, when I was in Silicon Valley, during the internet explosion, there were a couple CEOs that cashed out for over $1 billion, and they were national news celebrities for a little while because they said they're going to take their billions of dollars. There's one guy, it was like US Internet or something like that, just some weird ISP. He managed to cash out beautifully. Good luck, you know, congratulations to him. And he said, look, I'm going to go and try to find ET and Bigfoot. With ET, I never heard of his experiments that he was going to engage in to try and prove such a thing. Again, he faded away and he never came back with any evidence, so that should tell you something. But he was going to find Bigfoot, and he said his theories or his experimentation to find Bigfoot was to fly over all the regions of America and potentially around the world where Bigfoots have been sighted. And again, America is probably the number one place these things are sighted besides Asia. But he was going to use infrared at night to try and find these beasts crawling around. Because think about it, when you look down on a forest, if you could find infrared objects, you could find all the animals moving around. And a hominid, you know, Yeti Bigfoot is going to be pretty goddamn easy to see. I've had people ask me to do a Bigfoot episode. And I've said this before, but I really don't know if I could go on for an hour because I don't have a lot of personal research on this, nor is a subject that I find that really benefits my life in any way, shape, or form. But there's a theory that, there's a reality that the panda bear was something that was a mythical character in Asia. And it was, I think they searched for a collective 70 years to try and find this thing. And it was Teddy Roosevelt's kid that walked in. This is the romantic story, of course. Obviously, Asians found the animal, wasn't Americans. But when America and Europe finally was able to certify that pandas exist, the story goes is that Teddy Roosevelt's child, a grown man, walked into a hut and there was a skin of a panda on the wall. And he said, "Where is this?" And the local community took him down to some waterfall or something, and there they were. So they were theorized to exist, unfound for 70 fucking years, man. F-bomb included. So who knows? Maybe that theory is applied to Bigfoot, but no one's ever found one. There are some pretty compelling movies of these things walking. But again, like I say with UFOs, you know, the printing press killed messiahs. You don't have any more Jesus Christs anymore because we now can document what everyone has experienced on planet Earth. And the idea that somehow God surrenders himself to a printing press is pretty hard to believe. And, I said recently in my UFO show that I think that cell phones have absolutely crushed the actual photo proof of UFOs. And then right after I released the episode, within that week, I read an article on one of the news rags out there, one of the fake news places, that said that UFO sightings in the United States of America are at an all-time high. Really? Okay. Where the fuck have I been, right? I subscribe to Coast to Coast AM's Facebook feed. And yeah, they'll have, just a couple throughout the year. You know, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base had the weird wing thing that was hanging over the base. Again, taken by one spouse of a couple. And then a few weeks later, supposedly a 35mm shot was discovered of the same object from a different angle, but never two people standing in the same place, which allows us to triangulate the geometry. And again, no one ever saw it show up. No one ever filmed it really. I mean, they filmed it disappearing in a cloud, but if you know anything about After Effects, that's a pretty easy thing to do. So it would seem that the sightings of Bigfoot seem to diminish the more we have technology to prove whether or not it's there. And, you know, if you're talking about a whole race of hominids, right, you know, we always see them in our brains as full-grown adults, a male, a female. But where are the babies? Where are the nests? Where are these small ones? You know, there's been a couple sightings that supposedly have smaller ones. But they have to set up shop somewhere, right? What part of the earth is completely unexplored and completely untraversed? And are these creatures relegated to always living in the most hostile environments? A lot of people say, well, they're super smart. You know, they just can't communicate because they have the howling skull of a hominid. All right, well, where's the tools? Where are the tools that they build? Where are the huts that they construct? Why aren't we finding stacked rocks in an area that would provide shelter for a being that is potentially 8 feet to 10 feet tall? It's always some hunter, you know, that's got some blurry fucking shot. The guy that said he had one in a freezer turned out to be a costume. You know, they always, you know, 9 times out of 10, if not higher odds, they always have to admit to the hoax. A lot of money in some towns that say they've got them, right? And, you know, hey, more power to you if you're having fun with it. Roswell, New Mexico, even though I now believe that potentially something really happened there, you know, you could be born tomorrow and in 20 years you take over your dad's UFO shop and it's just providing money and it's providing entertainment for people and it's not harming anyone. So whatever. I don't have any criticism for people who believe in Bigfoots and that kind of thing. And hey, more power to you to find this stuff. But if you think you've got an area of the world that, in fact, if you found an area of the world where you've had a sighting, then it'll be pretty damn easy to get some, you know, off the shelf, you know, paramilitary, you know, stuff that you can get as a prepper that does infrared, and you could probably get one of your buddies who's trying to get his solo license or just got a solo license, the local eye doctor that bought a fucking, you know, one cycle engine, you know, two seater, and you could fly at an altitude where you could look all over the place, and your engine in the plane should scare the shit out of them a little bit and make them run for cover, whether it be running from a hunting exercise back into their hut. And then you'd have some more empirical evidence, but it never shows up, does it? So there's your digression of Bigfoot for those of you who want me to talk about that. Again, more power to every single human being on planet that's trying to parse reality, trying to find out where we are. It's healthy for the brain. And if you discover something, it's probably healthy for society to improve our vision of what's possible on this planet. Or plane. Whatever you believe. I think you feel me. If you dig this series, please subscribe. If you dig this particular episode, please give me the thumbs up. I have to tell you to click the bell now because YouTube wants you to have to go through 2 processes to be notified that a video exists. For those of you who subscribe to under 6 channels on YouTube, you'll never miss an episode, right? But for those of you who want to have notifications, that's the way to get it. DeepThoughtsRadio.com is the place to get all the feeds. Again, the RSS feed for your podcast needs to be accessed from your mobile device, not from a desktop. Otherwise, you'll just see a big feed on your web browser, most likely, unless you're in a Mac and you're accessing it from Safari, which will throw it into iTunes, probably. The Facebook link is up there, but for those of you who want to rush over, I don't do a heck of a lot on Facebook. I kind of keep you up to date on some of the more popular episodes that are trending really well. For an episode that trends really, really well, I put it on the front page of deepthoughtsradio.com, which will, if you're on a desktop computer, it automatically starts playing. I don't think anyone really uses that service at all. Hopefully this was useful. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.